Welcome to Clap with Jane with Jane Clap. I know some of the most interesting and inspiring humans that are helping to keep humanity afloat in their own unique ways, even in the middle of a crisis. I want you to meet them too. Hi, everybody. Welcome to Clap with Jane. I am so excited and I've been somewhat nervous for hours because my guest today just has been blowing my mind. The more I dig into her work, the more I am amazed at the breadth and depth of her work. And if you met her in person, you would see that she lives and breathes everything that she talks about and writes about and performs. So I have Kai Chang Tom here. She's a Canadian writer and former social worker who has dual master's degrees in social work and couple and family therapy from McGill University. She has published 4 books to date: the novel Fierce Femmes and Notorious Liars, a dangerous trans girl's confabulous memoir in 2016, which Emma Watson named for her feminist book club; the poetry collection A Place Called No Homeland in 2017, a children's book From the Stars in the Sky to the Fish in the Sea in 2017, and I Hope We Choose Love, a trans girl's notes from the end of the world in 2019. A book of essays centered on transformative justice. She is a storyteller in the lineage of changemakers, and her message is simple: we need to discover a revolutionary love. She speaks this message in poetry, in song, in movement, in words delivered straight from the soul. Kai Chang is also a facilitator, consultant, and sensitivity reader, and has been featured in Teen Vogue, the CBC, the New York Times, CTV, and The Social. She offers deep love, not tough love advice in her daily extra column, Ask Kai, advice for the apocalypse, funny, to help you survive and thrive in a challenging world. She is currently focusing her attention on the work of strengthening leftist and liberatory movements by addressing the ways that trauma and oppression prevent people from building strong, loving relationships, which in turn stops activists movements from creating sustainable interpersonal change. Her latest book, a collection of essays titled I Hope We Choose Love, dives deeply into the topics of transformative justice, prison abolition, trauma-informed activism, and building queer and trans futures. Her aim is to participate in a paradigm shift that moves beyond the simple politics of identity and diversity. She dreams of a movement that radically re-envisions the way that we relate to one another. Thank you so much for being online today. In the middle of COVID-19 crisis, hi.
Hi, Jane. It's so nice to be here. Thank you so much for inviting me to speak on this podcast. There's really nothing I'd rather be doing, I think, in the middle of, you know, the middle of the beginning of COVID-19 and the crisis it's bringing all over the world and to us here in Canada, Turtle Island. So yeah, thank you so much. I'm super grateful.
Thank you so much. One of the questions I ask the people who come on the podcast, the first one, so we can get to know you a little bit better from the inside, is what are you listening to right now?
Oh my goodness. So I love this question because it brings up this like really weird part of myself that I never share with anyone, but always kind of want to, you know. I'm like, does anyone else out there relate to this? I've always had like this kind of strange thing where I very rarely put anything in my ears unless like I'm, you know, recording a podcast or speaking to someone on the phone. I almost never listen to music unless it's ambient or I've gone to a concert or to a performance. And I very rarely listen to podcasts unless, you know, there are friends or something like this, something I have to listen to like the radio. But yeah, I don't make a practice of putting in ambient noise. And partly I think it's like just like a sensory thing. I struggle to have focus and to like feel landed in my body when there's background noise. But also because of this, whenever I go jogging or, you know, whenever I'm out in the world on the subway or whatever, whenever, now I'm thinking about when the next time I'll be on the subway is. I've learned to really value just the noise of the world, the sound of the world out there. And when I'm alone, the sound of silence. This is really the only way I think that I can hear myself thinking, or that I can hear myself breathing, hear my own heartbeat. And it's in these moments when I'm by myself and hearing the internal sounds of my thoughts, of my body, that I really start to get kind of interesting ideas, or that I start to feel connected to something bigger than myself. And the kind of the amazing thing, I don't want to say a silver lining, because I don't think there is a silver lining of COVID-19. There aren't like silver linings or upsides to tragedies, right? But an interesting opportunity that comes through it is I've had so much downtime to listen to nothing except, you know, something except what's inside myself, and you know, the sound of the cars outside, the wind, and you know, just getting deeper and deeper into that connectedness, which is bizarre and so necessary right now for me, at least, when you know, I can't see or touch anyone in person.
Are you comfortable sharing anything that you're noticing come up to your consciousness that you didn't know was there?
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, I think like a visceral sense of what it's like to feel afraid without feeling anxiety. You know, I think it would be very difficult for anyone, I think, to not feel fear in this moment, whether that's like the dissociated fear of, you know, disconnection or denial, or, you know, the really intense fear of panic. And, you know, as someone who's lived through a lot of just really intense kind of dangerous situations in my life, I felt a lot of anxiety in the past. And something really interesting, something I think that has, you know, has potential that I'm noticing now is I have fear, like I'm scared. I have a few symptoms now, you know, like hopefully they won't develop into anything. I'm particularly scared, you know, about for my loved ones and, you know, for the planet in general, but I am not anxious. And I'm really landing in this, like, okay, it's possible to be connected to our fear without being lost in the chatter of anxiety. So I I'm super valuing this, trying to follow that thread.
Can you tell what the difference between fear and anxiety feels like in your body?
Ooh, I love this. Yeah, let's see. Let me try and connect with it now. You know what it is, you know, anxiety for me feels like a nonstop racing, like tightness all over the body, and this kind of like, you know, kind of crawling ants feeling. I don't know if other people have this, but this like sensation that worry is like crawling all over my skin. And then there's fear inside that. But without it, to me, the fear feels like a little bit like an electric current, you know, like I'm aware. But I'm steady in it. You know, what a feeling to have, right? Like an acceptance of the possibility of loss and death without running toward loss or death. And that's been something I've been really aiming for. And that's something I really kind of, that came together a bit for me in your course, Movement for Trauma, Jane, if I can just like sell that to people a little bit. So you definitely didn't ask me to do, but I want everyone to know about the amazing work that you do and that you bring to people, especially in level two of your Movement for Trauma course, is that is the sense of being able to move inside, or like to move through earthquake architecture is a word that stands out from that course to me, from the fighting monkey philosophies that you brought as well. Really a kind of something valuable crystallized for me in that workshop around the world is falling apart. It's always been falling apart. Some of us, you know, have experienced it more than others. We're all experiencing it now. But in the falling, we can find balance through movement, literal and metaphorical, right? And that for me is that kind of steadiness, like that electric current of I'm afraid, and there's danger out there. But I'm not having this kind of like crawling feeling of like, I'm all over the place. I can't do anything. I'm helpless. I'm not helpless. You know, mm-hmm. COVID-19 is so much more powerful than any of us individually, but individually and collectively, we can still move inside it. We can still find a balance in the falling. Does that make sense?
Yeah. And I think sometimes I think anxiety isn't always telling the truth. But the fear that we feel is sort of representative of the truth and reality, versus anxiety is often not necessarily a response to facts. But the fear we feels different. And I love that you're saying this, because I've noticed a different feeling too. Mm-hmm. It's like this solidity in my body when I think of the fear that feels grounded at the same time. And
yes,
I wonder if there's something about the being with the collective conscious fear that we're all feeling on the planet that helps us ground in it a little bit more, because we're not alone in it.
Oh, I love that, Jane. Yeah, that like being that together in afraid feeling, together in fear feeling, bringing us all into like a more grounded place. Yeah. Oh, I'm going to think about this for a while.
I feel like anxiety can be like propaganda, right?
Well, we'll say more about that. Now I'm like, tell me more. Tell me everything about anxiety is propaganda.
But anxiety can be propaganda. It can be the past that is no longer present, that is still living in our bodies. Mm-hmm. Or it can be us telling ourselves about things in the future that might happen that aren't actually based on facts. But what we're feeling in terms of fear right now isn't really propaganda. It's the truth.
Right.
And the truth feels different in our bodies, I think.
Yeah, it lands in this kind of core, solid way, right? Like there's something, you know, I've been thinking a lot about integrity, you know, all the different meanings of integrity. And I mean, we could talk about integrity, I think, you know, for hours in the context of a pandemic, right? Like who has it, who doesn't, who's acting with who isn't. But you know, what you're saying makes me think of like that feeling of fear, that like non-propaganda, you know, that truth that lands in our integrity. We should be afraid, which doesn't mean we need to freak out, although that also reasonable response, you know, in some context, but it's just there, and we're here together in it. And something about that actually feels really, really strong, like to stand in that truth. There's a power in that.
Absolutely. And I think too, like, I was reading a little bit about the stories that you grew up with, the stories of the suffering that were woven into your childhood. And I wonder how that like impacts the way, if you mind saying something about that, impacts the way that you relate to what's happening now in a way that could be helpful for people to ground in as well.
Yeah, you know, thank you for asking this. I think what's so lovely about hearing the question phrased this way is like, I think, you know, trans people get asked all the time, like, oh, what about your childhood? And that feels invasive, but the way, because, you know, it's kind of this objectifying, but what you're asking is what I think people mean to ask, right? Is this like, how do you live in suffering? You know, like when we are exposed to suffering and trouble, which we all are, that's like, you know, that to me is like, oh, right. That's what all those interviewers are trying to ask about, actually, is like, what can we share from, you know, our individual experience of suffering or terror? And, you know, that you know connects us. And yeah, to answer that question more literally, I think, like, you know, I was exposed to danger as a kid, kind of through the fault of no one else's, right? Like my parents, you know, bless their hearts, are a Chinese migrant and the daughter of Chinese migrants, respectively, lived through kind of incredible poverty and suffering. I won't talk too much about that for their privacy, but you know, and when I came into the world, I think they just had no context for how to raise, I mean, kids at all in some cases, and you know, we're doing their best and an amazing job in a lot of ways. And certainly not like a trans kid, you know, like this sort of like extra challenge from the beyond, right? Like, surprise, your kid is just so different from anything you've been taught to see as normal in a child. And because of all this, I was raised without, you know, without attunement, right? Like, how can a parent attune to a child when they've never been taught that their child's, you know, development is, you know, healthy or normal? So, you know, my parents were seeing me grow up as this effeminate boy, quote unquote, you know, reacting to that because they had been taught that was, you know, illness, mental illness, bad, a failure, going to put me in danger. And so, you know, responding with all this kind of negative messaging around that. And what we know about young people growing up without attunement, right, is that it breeds trauma, like this sort of complex trauma or developmental trauma, which is kind of this, you know, for me, is like a way of saying living your life knowing that the world wasn't made for you. And there's so much pain in that for me still, right? Like, I can kind of feel that well of like, ooh, like the world wasn't made for me. And when people wonder why, you know, misgendering, for example, is so hurtful for trans people, I don't think it's very often, it's not usually like the individual act of misgendering, at least it's not for me, right? Like, what it does for me is that it taps into that well of suffering. The world wasn't made for you. You know, your body wasn't made to love. You weren't meant to survive. You know, in the words of the Black, you know, lesbian feminist and poet Audre Lorde, we were never meant to survive in this world, those of us who, you know, are different, racialized, queer, all that sort of stuff. And it hurts so much sometimes, you know, thinking about like, what would life be like, and all my, what would all my gifts be, you know, to the world, you know, if I had been born into a world that was made for me, if I had been given to parents who were taught how to raise me with the attunement I needed. But the flip side of that is, you know, of course, we talk a lot these days about the trauma superpower, or at least, you know, those of us in the field, right? And now we are living in a world that was made for none of us, right? None of us were made to live in social distancing or isolation, to have this kind of like invisible virus wandering around outside, just choosing, you know, people to take. That world wasn't meant for us. But because I had that, right? And because I think so many of us have a version of that, that, you know, that lack of attunement, that non-attunement, you know, you're different, you're racialized in an all-white town, you're a woman in an all-boys club, that the world wasn't made for you sense. If we can tap into the resilience of that feeling, which is, but I will survive. I will survive. And inside of that, I will find pleasure, I will find joy, right? And marginalized communities have so much of this, right? I think so much about the ballroom culture of drag queens and trans women in the States and in Canada, right? Like these incredible celebrations of trans feminine beauty, of gay dance, of movement. Inside that, you know, we can make these little foreign, these little worlds, these foreign worlds that are made for us. And we can do that inside self-isolation in COVID-19, right? Somehow, you know, in quarantine, there might be a way we can create a little bubble where it's still possible to be connected or joyful or free. Yeah, this is what I'm saying.
This is a quote of yours that I pulled out and teased out, and I think it speaks to what you just shared with me. It's suffering can either break you, or it can teach you how to lead people toward their own greatness.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, that's from the Sephora commercial.
Yeah.
You know, the filmmaker who made the commercial in which that quote, you know, is said is, he did such an amazing job, you know, boiled down like a 2-hour interview into this incredible kind of like snapshot of like what I wanna say. Thanks to him. Yeah, and that this is it, you know, is those of us who are born into suffering have the opportunity to bring that to others in a way that leads us toward, you know, I guess what I said was our own greatness. Another way of saying that is it allows us to be mentors on, you know, the hero's journey of others. the hero's journey, of course, being this like archetypal. I mean, you know all about this, of course, being a psychoanalyst in training.
In training.
like that journey toward the self, which is, you know, sparked by the call to adventure, sparked by loss, all that sort of thing. And you know, the gift of the traumatized or the marginalized is that we go on that journey so many times, we become used to it. And in that we have the capacity then to take others with us, which we can choose to do or not do. But in this time, I think we got to start choosing each other.
I think there's a lot, this type of suffering and fear isn't something many people have ever come across or faced directly. And I think the hero's journey is the perfect way to look at it. There's so many people who've already traveled that path, who've had to go through the abyss, so to speak. That's part of the hero's journey and come out. And when Kai Cheng was in the 2 days of training with me, well, first of all, before she came, I was like, holy shit. She's coming to the training. And she asked me, like, do you know my work? I'm like, yeah. But there's this love, grounded, solid joy and love in you that has nothing to do with bypassing. There's no spiritual bypass in you. You look directly at reality. And the truth and its suffering. And there's this power in you that chooses relationship, that chooses love and possibility. And it's just, even just hearing you speak, it's so powerful. Like, we need to, and I would hate to put anybody in the position of having to do more emotional labor, given what lots of folks have already had to do.
Yeah, that catch 22 of emotional labor is so, you know, interesting. If I can just like fasten on to that for a second, you know, this like, because it's true. I think you're so right. Like, it's so hard for people who are always being asked, can you explain yourself? Can you help me get some insight? And that, you know, that's kind of I think of that as kind of like a capitalist request, right? Like, can I somehow extract, right? like a resource from you, which, yeah, that sucks. I don't think it always has to be like that. And there's an element of, you know, choosing, right? Like choosing to teach when we're able, choosing the boundary when we can't, you know, choosing to ask when it feels appropriate, choosing to not when it's not appropriate, right? But, you know, in the moment of crisis, particularly, I think a lot of the rules change, right? Or the rules of engagement change. Not that we can't have boundaries. We have to have boundaries now, but we get a second chance to kind of to create the dynamic between marginalized and majority person, right? Or between dominant and oppressed. And in that, I think we have this like, capacity to be like, well, okay, if someone is asking me to share about my experience of oppression or trauma, is you know, I can always choose to say no, or hopefully I can always choose to say no. But also, you know, how can this be a relationship, right? Like, how can I get something out of this telling of my story? And for the person asking, right, like how can the asking be an act of solidarity rather than like a demand for service? Right. And because sometimes we want to tell our story, right? Like sometimes sometimes we want to see that our words go into a person and change who they are, and then they become a better ally for us, right? And sometimes when we ask someone to tell their story, it's not just, oh, give me insight so that I can be a better person. Sometimes it's like really directly, how can I support you better in this moment? And that relational kind of exchange of knowledge and of support, I think, is what allows us then to get outside that catch 22 of like, well, I don't want to educate because it's just not going to go anywhere. I don't want to educate because it's just endlessly emptying me out. It becomes then this feedback loop of my telling my story then, you know, brings the reward of I get more supported. I have a closer relationship with that person. And then together, our relationship ripples outward into the world.
There's that interview you did with Peter Haldeman in the New York Times.
Oh, yeah. I love that interview.
And this is a quote I pulled from that interview you had with Peter Haldeman. There is a long tradition of trans people being confined to memoir. Mm-hmm. This idea that we have to narrate our lives for the titillation of cisgender readers. Mm-hmm. When I was a child, I never fit in, and then I wanted this other genitalia. I thought that it would be fun to take that on. And I think of, when I think of the emotional labor that's going to be needed when this is all done, mm-hmm. I think of it being so related to our common humanity versus identity in many ways.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Remembering that common humanity is the only way we're going to get out of this, I think, yeah. Or get out of it in a way that doesn't involve, even more horror than is, natural to a pandemic, which is, what am I saying here, really? Right. I've always struggled with identity politics. Because they are useful in kind of naming difference, which we really have to in order to see inequity and oppression and violence. But identity politics can also trap us in this, politics of division, right? Like in fragmentation, this, we sometimes can get lost in this, I can never relate to you, or I could never ever, be in a, equitable or better relationship with you because you have more privilege than me or more power than me. You benefit from my suffering, right? And that to me has a little bit of the echo of trauma thinking in it, right? This kind of black and white, like you'll always be my enemy, right? And that grief of that unshakable wall of grief, I'll never get through it. You'll always, always be separate from me. And, in this moment around COVID-19, what's encouraging actually is we see so much of of remembering common humanity, right? Like if we're on Facebook or social media, looking at other mutual aid groups, people are posting all the time now, right? With saying things like, oh, I'm a trans person and I need this. I'm a sex worker and I need this. I'm a white cis person and I need this, right? Or I have this to offer and I can bring it to you. In the moment of crisis, we discover who we are beyond identity, mm-hmm. right? Like that moment of forging of the self. It's our common values. And this belief that, because you, Jane, are like, you don't share my experience, right? And I don't share yours. We kind of just push through that. It's true we don't share each other's experiences, but here we are making a thing to put out mm-hmm. in the world. Mm-hmm. And that's mm-hmm. going to have to be enough, right? And in these moments, I don't think we need to feel like we're permanently or unshakably distant from one another. That too is like collective trauma, right? This like severing of the link between individuals. In the moment of crisis, we are sometimes inspired to reach out and be linked, together in a communal organism. And I'm seeing that everywhere, actually.
Is there anything that you've seen recently that you found really hopeful?
Yeah, well, so it's funny, like everything is so kind of like mediated through the lens of capitalism, social media, all like the difficult things in our world, right? But one thing, I'm really inspired. I never thought I'd say this by Facebook right now, not the company, but like by people's behavior on Facebook.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, well, I don't know, and it might be just the echo chamber that I'm, kind of in social media, but I'm so impressed by the mutual aid organizing I'm seeing. And the shift away from, I never thought Facebook was going to be anything except this sort of landscape of self-promotion and arguing and then, kind of endlessly shared news articles in this sort of dissociated way. That's how I experience and use Facebook anyway. But now I'm seeing so much connectedness and so much material, real world assistance and exchange happening. So, you know, and people just saying stuff that like I never thought would be possible. Like people, you know, I have a lot of connections to the sex work community, being a former worker myself and knowing so many trans women who have used sex work to survive and to get through the world. And I never thought that it would be possible to just go on Facebook and say, oh, you know, I'm a sex worker and all of my business has dried up because of COVID-19. And I need food right now. I need money right now. And see, you know, the general population, office workers, stay-at-home parents, right? Respond to that with complete sort of like, yes, absolutely. It's amazing.
Oh my God.
Yeah, it's really, really cool.
Wow. So you've mentioned that you've noticed people coming together on Facebook and stepping up and being there for people who are marginalized and needing support. That's happening. And then what are you also noticing in terms of the shadow side and humanity?
I'm so grateful you asked this, Jane, because, you know, something I've been meditating on a lot is this phrase that's coming to mind. I'm not sure if I heard it somewhere else or read it somewhere else or if it just kind of bubbled up. But, you know, over and over again, I keep thinking in our darkest moments, we discover who we are. And some of that is this glorious kind of like coming togetherness, right? We discover who we are as a group and as individuals. We discover this generosity and courage. And sometimes we also discover our violence, right? Sometimes we discover our cravenness instead of our courage and our greed instead of our generosity. That shadow side of the self that says, I'll survive at the cost of others because there is no choice. And I think we are seeing this, you know, a lot right now, particularly kind of in the day-to-day stuff, like the grocery stores, for example, in Toronto. There is not a shortage of food at this time in Canada's major urban centers. But you wouldn't know that to look at the state of the shelves in a lot of the bigger stores or at the state of how people are sometimes, behaving. When together, and there's something about being around food in groups particularly, I think, that brings up this kind of intense, hoarding, grabbing, seizing mentality. We're seeing it in people who are also, you know, hoarding sanitation supplies and then reselling them for, you know, a huge markup. We're seeing the shadow side of racism, right? Like all this kind of hatred that was just under the surface and now is bubbling up, particularly toward East Asian folks, but also every migrant, right? Or every person perceived to be a migrant in the settler colonial society. We're seeing, you know, the government close the border to, quote, irregular migrants, which means turning back asylum seekers, people who are trying to save themselves from intense danger in their countries of origin. So yes, unfortunately, in our darkest moments, we will also discover that who we are is sometimes not who we might wish to be. I mean, that the people around us are not who we hoped that they were. And I think the only, you know, the only response I've come to around that in this moment is, okay, so that's there, right? And I maybe I've had the dubious benefit of having seen that before, you know, as a trans woman of color, as a former sex worker, I've experienced a lot of hatred and violence. And so my eyes are open, like a lot of my community's eyes are open to what people can be. Because of that, I think this is what, you know, I think inspires me to do transformative justice, right? So if we believe that people can choose, you know, with support, they can choose their better selves, they can choose their courageous selves instead of their craven selves, then we can put that message out there, right? We can look to our loved ones and say, hey, this crisis is not about racism. I'm not going to accept that from you because you're better than this. Hey, you know, to my family, we're going to take the food we need and just the amount that we need, and we're going to share it, you know? We can hold each other to that standard. We can co-regulate each other ethically. Then I think we can get through that. But it will be touch and go. It depends on each of our kind of individual choices and, you know, how brave we can be with one another. Thank you for asking that, because it is on my mind a lot too.
Thank you for that. And I hope, I wish the world were different. I wish human nature was better than it can be sometimes. And I appreciate you sharing that. It's really important.
Thank you, Jane.
I mean, I know that we're stuck inside and it's not the time to necessarily drive ahead with work, but given that how your work has evolved and is continually evolving, let me see if I can find another one of your beautiful quotes. There is a better way to live. There's a better way to love. Let's find it together. How would you say your work is going to shift in response to this crisis or after this crisis, or will you just hold steady to where you were going? Because it seems to be exactly what's gonna be needed.
Oh, I was just thinking about this yesterday, Jay. You're right in my, right in my current there. Yeah, well, it's funny, you know, I low-key have been preparing for the end of the world for several years now.
Oh my God. Whoa.
Yeah, you can kind of track that, right? If we look at even like the title, like the titling of the written work I've been doing, right? Like, you know, my essay collection, A Trans Girl's Notes from the End of the World, or my advice column, Advice for the Apocalypse. It's been on my mind. And here's something maybe we haven't talked about yet is when I came to Movement for Trauma, I was really, it was part of this like ongoing self-development I was doing over 2019 and early 2020, pre-COVID 2020 for North America, I guess, of like trying to, in my head, I was calling it like apocalypse training or like survivor training for the end of the world. You know, and I think there's always, I don't know. I mean, it's weird. I just have, I've had dreams of the end of the world for a few years now. And, not to say that COVID-19 is the end of the world entirely, but it's the end of the world as we know it. I think it would be naive to think that we're just going to go back to business as usual. And in fact, I hope we don't, right? Like we're seeing the exposure of so many social inequities, because of the virus, right? Like who can stay inside, who has to go out and work? Who has healthcare insurance, who doesn't, you know, what's happening in prisons where people are just so vulnerable and can't get out. And, you know, because of that, then, you know, their infections are also a danger to all of us. We're also connected. So, you know, I hope we don't go back to this as usual. But all this to say, you know, I came to your training because I was looking for body, mind, you know, or somatic practices that would help me, honestly, like wrap my head around this. I believe the end of the world is coming. And whenever, you know, whenever I would watch like the survivalist, like the prepper TV series, I don't know if you've seen those, Jane, but like,
yes, I have. Oh, I could only watch two. Oh my gosh. I'm like, I'm doing nothing to survive right now. I'm not ready. Like these people who can live for 2 years on dried food and oh my goodness. Yeah.
Okay. But here's the thing, Jane, I think that you are so much more ready for the end of the world. than so many people, because, you know, knowing you and having experienced your courses, my belief is that, like, what we really need for the end of the world is this ability to move through crisis, to connect in crisis, in the midst of trauma, to be with our trauma as it's happening and unfolding. And I mean, that's so present in all of the work you do, I've noticed that you're doing like co-regulation, you know, practices, you know, online. This is what we need, right? Like most of the preppers, not all of them to give them credit, but a lot of the preppers on TV are like, yeah, I'm going to build my bunker. I'm going to buy my guns. I'm going to, I'm so sorry. I'm going to plug in my computer. One second.
Oof, no worries.
We'll just cut this out, right?
Yeah, no problem. We can cut it out.
Let's or you know, we also don't have to, but yeah, you know, on television, the preppers, so many of them are saying, I'm gonna build my bunker, I'm going to can all my beans, all this stuff, which is, you know, like that too is trauma thinking. The thinking, oh well, I'm gonna isolate and see no one, and then shoot anyone who comes near me who wants, you know, who wants to partake of my food, we are, that's not surviving. Like, even if those people live, which, you know, I hope they do, but what is that surviving as? Does the spirit survive when we fall into this mindset of, I'll kill anyone who comes near me and all my food is for myself and my family? No, we don't. That's not survival. It's not the survival I want anyway. And the work that you do, on the other hand, Jane, is so much about connecting, right? And, you know, like this, the workshops I was in anyway, I was like, oh yeah, this is how we, you know, rise to challenges. This is how we solve problems. This is how we use our individual bodies, also different, right? All such different abilities, to come together and survive and celebrate. And so, you know, anyway, I think you're ready. I think you can do it.
Well, I feel safer when I feel connected. And I think that's the message that has to become truth. But for everyone, we are safer when we're connected. We are safer when there's social cohesion. And absolutely. I've been very lucky. And not everybody has experienced safe social connection. In fact, a lot of folks have learned that it's safer to isolate because of the harm that they've experienced, either through systemic oppression or in family systems. And I so hope that somehow the people who need connection and belonging and support can somehow get it to them now. I don't know how, but I think the messages that you bring to your work and to the world and the groups that you work with, the people that your books reach, and the spirit and integrity that you bring to your work, I just think it's absolutely essential. And I'm just really glad we had a chance to talk today. And I could talk to you for so long, but I want to be respectful of your time and your energy.
Thank you. I just, I'm loving this though.
We should keep going. So if you could send yourself a message 4 weeks from now, like a little envelope that you put in the mail and you receive in a month, what would you want to, what would you want to tell yourself?
Oh, wow. this question is challenging, but I also love it. So it's like, what would I be saying to myself 4 weeks in the future?
Yeah.
I'm also wishing, like, I wish my 4 weeks from now self could tell me what's going to happen, but, let's see. I think acknowledging that whatever happens, both in my personal life and in the world at large, is going to be challenging, right? You know, scary, difficult, perhaps tragic, you know. I think what I'd want to say to myself is, remember who you are. Remember where you come from. Remember who you come from. Remember who brought you here, right? All of that for me is like, is a way of saying, you come from brave people who tried their best. They had values, you know, and lived them. This I can say for my parents, for the queer and trans people who helped me survive my adolescence and young adulthood, for my mentors in sex work, who taught me, you know, how to survive and the value of myself, all my mentors in psychotherapy and social work and community organizing, all the people I've worked with, they were brave, right? They tried their best. They gave me gifts like, you know, the gifts of knowing what other people and what connection are worth. Even when relationships weren't always safe, they had such power and such potential. And these values are the ones that have kept me going for so long. So I would say to, you know, future me, remember that. Remember where you come from. Remember what you've survived. Be the person you want to be as best you can, and forgive yourself for imperfection. We don't have to be perfect. We don't have to be fearless, but we must be strong. We must be brave. And you are.
I feel that so deep in my stomach and my heart and the edges of my skin. And it's, it's bringing me to tears hearing you say that. It's I'm going to take that. I'm going to remember that when, you know, a month from now, when the landscape looks different, when I don't want to lose that core of integrity that you speak of. So thank you for that. That's like nourishment for my soul today. Thank you.
Oh, I'm so glad to hear it, Jean. And thank you for giving me the space and the questions to think that all out with you. It's been, yeah, I really, yeah, I'm just feeling this warmth and this connection. I'm so appreciative of the work you do. I can't wait to listen to the podcast. Not just this episode. In truth, it will be difficult for me to listen to the podcast because I'm always like, oh, Kai Cheng, your own voice, your own words, what is this? but especially, you know, your other guests too, there's so much. Those of you listening, you are in for such amazing insight and wisdom. Jane gave me a bit of a sneak peek of what's ahead. I won't tell you, but you're in for some amazing stuff. So yeah, I can't wait to see where this goes.
Thank you for being in my life and being available. And you take care of yourself and be well.
You too, Jane.
Okay. Bye. Thank you so much to Kai Cheng for being my second guest on Clap with Jane. I'm so honored that you'd spent that time with us. Your message needs to reach other people. Please share with your friends if you feel it would help them. And know that the podcast is now live on iTunes and Spotify. And of course, thank you to my daughter, Chase, for spending many hours editing this podcast. Take care of yourself over the next little while. There'll be another podcast in a week. Stay safe. Stay connected.